Want to hear something icky, a little bit ugh?
If I say rat and if I say sliced pan, then maybe this story will ring a bell with you.
Well, reporter Joan O'Sullivan got all the graphic bells ring when she spoke to Áine Lawler on the News at One and described video footage of a rat, yes, a rat, emerging from a sliced pan in a service station. And if you were thinking about having a slice of toast right now, well, maybe don't.
It begins with a shot of showing two loaves of Brennan's sliced pan on a shelf.
Perfectly innocent. I mean, they look normal.
Absolutely normal.
They've been opened but resealed.
Absolutely. They're on a shelf behind what looks like a deli counter, so that's where you would expect to see them. And you watch it, and after a few seconds, you can see that the packaging, the brown and white packaging on one of the lobes is quivering and it's starting to move. And then the camera zooms in, and after a few seconds more, you see a little head emerge from the wrapping, and then the entire body of what looks like a large grey rat.
Rather a well-fed looking rat, I thought, looking at the video.
He didn't look like he'd been struggling to find his dinner. And it climbs out of the bread packet. It clambers down onto the shelf. The camera follows it until it runs behind a piece of equipment. It looks to be perhaps a stainless steel oven, something like that. The footage ends there, so we can't see what happened next. We don't know where the rat ended up.
Oh yeah, no, he's around the back of a dumpster, reclining in a smoking jacket, having a little nibble on some tuck biscuits. All of that happened at an Apple Green service station in Cherry Orchard, which is now conducting a full investigation of the incident. Bet you're awake now. Wide awake and, ooh, ever so slightly twitchy. The crisis in the beef industry led the news in the first half of this week. On Monday, Hugh Doyle of the Beef Plan Movement spoke to Morning Ireland about the weekend talks and the proposal which protesting farmers would neither accept or reject.
It's 44 hours on the go. So you can imagine both mentally and physically we were shattered. We thought we had something to come back to the farmers with. Now, just to be clear, Beefland, which is my association, or our association, Beefland Movement, we weren't involved in these protests kind of set up organically with farmers through frustration and whatever. And we did explain to the minister that we would, I would know a certain amount of people on various different protests that we would engage with them. I genuinely thought we had something to offer. I left Ag House last night at 5:30 p.m. Got into my jeep, drove down to Ballyjames Duff to meet a group down there. I was hardly able to get up. Now, I'm not being smart here, but I was absolutely, people can realise when you're a day and 3/4 without any sleep. I went down expecting that I would get some sort of a positive reaction, but I'll be honest, I didn't. The unfortunate thing with farmers at the moment, and people need to realise, they feel abandoned. They feel that a lot of these talks, what we're bringing back to the table, are promises going forward. And what they want to see is money, tangible money.
The proposal was to end legal proceedings against protesting farmers in exchange for some bonus payments and a review of prices. However, protests continued. Later that day, Cormac Healy of Meat Industry Ireland spoke to Claire Byrne on the News at One.
We heard Ciarán Mullooly saying there that there are local conversations happening with factory managers about the base price. Are you aware of those conversations happening?
I'm aware that, you know, since the end of negotiations last night where the agreement was reached, that, you know, blockades continue, and there has been some discussion or some representations made at local level. I'm aware that base price has been raised in that. But effectively, I mean, this is a blackmailing situation where protesters are illegally blocking the gates and suggesting that they discuss with management when they can reopen. A point, I think, that has to be made here now. We are at a juncture where irreparable damage is being done to the customer base for Irish beef.
The next day, drive time brought us the Taoiseach's words from the Dáil.
In relation to the protests and the blockades, Minister Creed convened talks. Those talks were successful in coming to an agreement. Six farm organisations representing the vast majority of farmers in the state have endorsed that agreement. The protesters were successful in highlighting the issues affecting beef farmers. They did bring the industry to the table, but all that can be achieved from protests and blockades has now been achieved. And I would ask that they end now and that people try to make this agreement work, because I am deeply concerned. And I think everyone in this House who cares about the beef industry, who cares about rural Ireland, who cares about employment, is concerned. Is concerned that continued protests and continued blockades will lead to more job losses. There have been 3,500 job losses already. There is a risk that meat plants, meat factories may close permanently, and this could do long-term irrevocable damage to the industry, and I don't think anyone in this House wants that.
And we also heard from President Michael D. Higgins speaking at the National Ploughing Championships down in Carlow.
A person who may have only one purchaser, I've been concerned about the vulnerability of the rural producer and the person who in fact has actually, as I have said, the person who really needs protection. They need transparency, protection and a fair system. The word fair was there in the campaign for fair rent. So let us now have fair produce, fair treatment for everybody involved, and let's move on from that. And the very best way to do that, the very best way to do that, maybe such is what is an offer, may not be the perfect resolution, but let's make it the best beginning and go on and build on that.
President Higgins down in Carlow. And on Wednesday afternoon, news came through that protests at a processing plant owned by Dawn Meats in Slane, County Meath, had been called off. Mary Wilson spoke to Enda Fingleton of the Beef Plan Movement.
Is this the beginning of the end of these protests that have now gone on for weeks and weeks?
I would hope so. Sunday's the conclusion of the agreement between Backwest and then Sunday, or the weekend in Ag House. It's a very good deal, we feel, for farmers. It's the absolute best that could be got with all the organisations around the table. And hopefully farmers can get back to doing normal business. And through our producer organisation, we hope to drive on a better price and get a better return for farmers.
The independent farmers are saying they hope farmers throughout the country will view this deal through similar eyes to those in Slane, and they'll see that although there are areas that are lacking, it's a solid foundation that can lead to positive changes. What was the game changer here?
I think a lot of people went into the weekend expecting us to walk out of Ag House with an immediate price increase for beef, but that was never going to happen. When you take time to read the documents, put the two documents together and take time to read them and digest what's in them, there are some very big changes coming down the line within the beef industry, and farmers' hand is going to be a lot stronger from here going forward.
Drive time on Wednesday. So, have you recovered from Culture Night? Well, if you were in Shannon, you might have seen a performance by God Knows, who was a Culture Night ambassador. And earlier in the week, he came into Sean Roxon Arena and gave a special live freestyle performance. Here's just a snippet of it.
Mom's on the meds, dad's on the meds, not the same with our cars on the meds, and he's on a mask off while I'm trying to keep my mask on, keep a lease on myself, but can't even cop on, said I was walking away like Craig, but can't even jog on, I'm so off, but I'm so on. Laughing at the pimp, I can't find it funny. Cheating on my pain, cause I lie in my worries. Ever wonder why? Generation Y, cause we ask questions. Too many answers, redefines the term. Don't tell the left what the right is thinking. Why am I sinking? Why am I drinking? One pint, two pint dance. One pint, no pint dance. Is the glass full or is the glass empty? Whatever it is, it sure is hefty, sure is sexy, sure is tempting to say that I'm doing everything trendy. Not flexible, but sure and bendy. Thank God for faith, it comes in handy. You are scared of catching AIDS. We're scared of catching these L's. We do it to ourselves, I don't do it for the cells, but I sure do help. I'm chasing the goats from coast to coast. Put my lines in air quotes. Make me a genius. Praying that the reviewers don't take us to the cleaners. Get me involved before I dissolve. I beg you, let me evolve before I evaporate.
Whew, live and dangerous, that was God Knows, as heard on Arena during the week. It was Dublin's weekend when it came to football. The men got the drive for 5, and it was 3 in a row for the women in front of record audiences.
I woke this morning to a city exhausted by victory.
A suitably chuffed Lord Mayor of Dublin, Paul McAuliffe, on Morning Ireland on Monday. Exhausted they may be, but celebrations will now be held on September 29th for both teams to further exhaust the city, no doubt. But Paul McAuliffe did give one little cause for celebration.
It is customary to give homework off today, isn't it?
Well, absolutely, Gavin. As Lord Mayor of Dublin, I have very limited powers, but the one I have is to give no homework in Dublin City. And so today on Morning Ireland, I'm going to give that call out to the teachers of the city. No homework today, guys.
Ooh, that's the kind of power you'd like to have. That was Lord Mayor of Dublin, Paul McAuliffe. And inspiring teachers are being recognised by DCU. One of the people on the shortlist is retired teacher Mary Daly. She had worked in St Dominic's College in Ballyfermot in Dublin. Niamh Smith nominated her, and she spoke to Claire Byrne on the News at One.
Yeah, she was a great mentor, and she was a great role model. I suppose she was there through the thick and the thin of going through school life and being a teenager, I suppose. And she was always the first thing welcoming me at the door when the breakfast clubs in the morning, to making sure that I stayed in school, knocking on the door when I wasn't in school, and just always believing in me when I couldn't believe in myself, and making sure that I recognised and fulfilled my own potential to go on to further education and third level education. So that's, I suppose, where I came in, as my role and my passion to become a community and youth worker now. And I suppose as a direct result of the impact that Mary had in my life and so many others, I suppose that's where it led me to be today as well, to also try and give other young women the same experiences that I had.
And you feel that it was due certainly in part Mary's role in your life kept you in the system.
Yeah, 100%. I suppose if it wasn't for Mary, I suppose I would just be another statistic of an early school leaver. Yeah, Mary was my Irish teacher, and also she put me forward on the student council, all different committees and stuff like that. But I suppose just being there every day, you know, putting the structures in place, giving you the extra support when it comes to leaving cert, studying and grinds, keeping me on the straight and narrow. Yeah, I suppose just believing in me, and I suppose from myself and why I nominated her was because she always went above and beyond her vocation of just teaching in the classroom.
And Mary Daly talked about how she saw the role of the teacher.
We have a huge, huge, it can have a huge impact on the lives of young people. And I always believe that every young person can succeed in life and succeed in education. And when I joined St Dominic's in Ballyfermot many years ago, that was my strong moral purpose, to ensure that all our young ladies would get the chance and believe in themselves that they can make a difference in the world and can stay in education and progress to further and higher education and break educational inequality.
An impressive teacher there, that was Mary Daly on the News at One. On Tuesday, Liveline listeners reacted to an Irish Times article by Patsy McGarry, which had described suicide as a deeply thoughtless and selfish act. This prompted people to talk about their experience of depression and the lack of mental health services in the country. Katie rang in to talk about a school friend of hers who had died by suicide at the age of 14.
She used to catch the bus up. She used to get travel to near me. I used to live in London, and she used to get close to me in the morning so we could meet up and get the bus together to school. We spent an awful lot of time together. We spoke an awful lot about all different kinds of things. And for me, it was completely out of the blue.
You had no idea that she was struggling in that way?
Struggling, maybe. She was struggling, but I hadn't had experience of that before. So it was kind of my introduction to it, really, I suppose. And I tell you, like, people can put their views forward and say that they can label it this, that and the other. But from my own experience, I know that It was the fallout from that, the school going around and like in tears. You know, we were offered a bit of counselling, but I think it was quite a new thing for the teachers also. And it was massive. The fallout from it was massive, and I still think about her. I still think about she was at that age where she was kind of like, I don't know, I kind of think about it as like when you're 14, you're not a child and you're not a quite an adult. So she was kind of, I don't know, she was lanky and she was, you know, she was going to be really beautiful, which she was beautiful, but you could tell she was at that awkward kind of stage. Do you know what I mean? And I often think about her, especially on birthdays and kind of big occasions. I wonder what would her life have turned out to be.
And her friend's death had stayed with Katie.
And Katie, obviously, you said there, and I don't know how much you want to say about this, but that this obviously took a big toll on you, losing your friend at 14, and you suffered mental health issues yourself into your 20s.
Yeah, I have
then.
Throughout my life, I have really. I didn't go through with it. I'm delighted. I didn't because I'm. You know, I have a daughter now. She's 11, and I'm managing my own mental health now. I still live with depression, but it's I've learned different kind of mechanisms, and I haven't been to the point where I want to end my own life, not for a long, long time, which is great for me, you know. But I just think, you know, I'm on medication now for it. I've given up alcohol. I think alcohol and medication do not mix, and I've had counselling for years as well. I've just made a few life changes that have benefited me. Taking up art, I'm a musician anyway, but I've taken up art again, and I just think, you know, that we're not told at school to be kind to ourselves, and that it's all, there's so much pressure. Get your points, go to college, get a good job, blah, blah, blah. Nobody really teaches that much about the importance of how it is, how you feel. You're kind of taught to follow this path. There's just kind of this unwritten kind of pathway that you're supposed to, you know, school, college, marriage, mortgage, you know, all that kind of stuff. And there isn't enough emphasis put on creative stuff, you know, like art, music, drama, all that stuff that's good for getting out your emotions.
The kind of stuff that feeds, you know, the soul, as they say.
Absolutely, yeah.
Liveline with Katie Hannon on Tuesday. And speaking of feeding the soul, cellist Kate Ellis was John Kelly's guest on Sunday. She spoke about her love of Bach, and between them, John and Kate tried to get to grips with the master's genius and the nature of his music.
Do you think there's something in us as humans that recognise patterns, even if we're not even aware of recognising them, but we do find them satisfying?
I do. I think everybody recognises them.
Yeah, but you know when you see those, there's a few of these wonderful graphic realizations, whatever you call it, of Bach's music online, where you see how they move forward and then they move backwards on top of each other and then they turn over and they're backwards and But I think somehow you kind of instinctively pick that up without even understanding it.
I think you do. Yep.
That might explain Bach then. Yeah. If we've done nothing else tonight,
we've explained Bach.
We've done nothing else tonight.
And her choice was Bach's English Suite No. 1, The Allemande, performed here by Glenn Gould.
Thank you.
Glenn Gould performing Bach's English Suite No. 1, The Allemande, as heard on John Kelly's Sunday Service, the choice of cellist Kate Ellis. We'll be back just after this break, and a small warning, the first few minutes of the next part probably won't be suitable for younger ears. Welcome back. And just a small heads up that the next 3 or 4 minutes might not be suitable for younger listeners. On Thursday, Sean O'Rourke spoke to Fiona Doyle, the daughter of convicted paedophile Patrick O'Brien. Fiona suffered a decade of sexual abuse at the hands of her father, and it seems that after serving 6 of a 12-year sentence, he may be released next month. She spoke to Sean about confronting her father in hospital when she heard about this possible early release date.
Well, he put out his hand, he shook my hand and he said, I'm sorry. And I said to him, Dad, I need this to end. And he said, how can it end? I said, it'll end when you die. And I need to see you go into the ground. And you can tell the rest of the family members that I'm not going to be denied that. That's what I need to get over, to move on. It's not get over, because you never get over what's been done.
But Fiona, you've no way of knowing when that moment will come, have you?
Well, see, that's my issue now, that he's getting out. I have a fear that that's going to be taken from me, because I know I need that. I need that for closure. And that's kind of the spiteful thing that could be done to me is, we're not going to tell you.
You say, you know, he put out his hand and he said, I'm sorry. Was that an expression of remorse?
No, he took it back then within 5 minutes by complaining about how thin he is, how hard life is, he gets no visitors, nobody comes to see him, he doesn't even know what's going on in his family, things like that. And I was sitting looking at him and I was saying to myself, you just taken back that sorry, because you're full of self-pity. So how can you be sorry for what you've done when you're full of self-pity? And when we discussed me going to his funeral, do you know what he said to me? He said, just don't ruin the funeral.
And Fiona Doyle talked about the ongoing and enduring legacy of the rape and abuse she had suffered.
My life is full of triggers. And triggers are small things that you're kind of going about in your everyday life, and then something will trigger a memory and set you back. Like, I have a big issue with porridge. And my 12-year-old loves porridge. But I cannot bear porridge.
Why is that?
Well, because my mother used to make it the night before, and it was my job to come down to reheat it, to give it to my brothers and sisters, and then to wash the pot. And I couldn't wash the pot. I was that small, and I would get a beating when I came in from school if I hadn't done it right.
God heavens.
So I used to get my nails and scrape.
And are there other things that are like that as
like
well?
You go into a shop and coffee, because my father loved Maxwell House, his certain bread, his certain butter, everything. Or now I live in a lovely part of the country, the beach. I cannot go on the beach without thinking of him raping me in the sand dunes. Even driving up here. We go past Fox Rock. He used to go and get me, go up into the golf course in Fox Rock and rape me up on the course. He did it in Deans Grange Cemetery. So when you're just on a day out and you're going a particular direction, something will just hit you, and that memory will replay in your head. But I've adjusted myself to it.
Yeah.
Because it's too exhausting to fight it. It's too exhausting to not let it happen. But and it does. It happens every day of your life. And you stop even talking about it. You stop telling people. You just let it happen and try and get on with the rest of the day.
Fiona Doyle talking to Sean O'Rourke on Thursday. On Tuesday, the focus of Mooney Goes Wild was the common swift.
In May 2012, we travelled to Baku in Azerbaijan. A restoration project had begun on a 12th century tower, which was built as part of the old walled city. Our guide was Samir Nuriyev, director of the State Historical Architectural Reserve.
Yeah, the Maiden Tower is the main monument of Baku, and it's actually a symbol of Baku. In the Middle Ages, used as a fortification. And while used as a fortification, it could keep about 200 people at the time. Mm-hmm. And it was actually called Maiden. One of the legends says it, why it is called Maiden, because it was never annexed and kept by the enemy.
The crumbling bricks of the Maiden Tower also provided nooks and crannies in which swifts would nest. And in order to undertake conservation work to move those swifts, they had to be attracted to move house, so to speak. And this is where a CD of swift sounds comes in. Here's Niall Hatch.
It's only just been realised recently, that wonderful screaming noise we're hearing right now. On cue, that's actually the sound of the male calling first and then the female following. And that's only been realised in the last few years, that it's actually, what happens is a duet between the two birds. And in Europe, we don't have too many birds that duet. With most of our birds in Europe, it's just the male that sings. Some it's just the female, but mostly just male. But having a duet between the pair, it's almost unique.
Is it bonding?
It is. It's very much a bonding thing. And in fact, they're not even able to tell who's male and who's female until they hear the pitch of the song. So it's absolutely amazing. And that song is how they determine their nesting sites. So without hearing lots of sound and a lot of noise of a colony of swifts, they won't want to move into a new nest site. So the only way that you can encourage swifts to take up new nest boxes is by playing this sound. And I know that a lot of work has been done on this. With other birds, it would be a bad idea to play any kind of sound near the breeding season. It would disrupt them. With swifts, it
send them away, actually.
It would, yeah, absolutely. They would feel threatened. They would feel like the territory is taken. But swifts want to nest in colonies. Safety in numbers. And they're happiest nesting in an area where they hear lots of the swift. So you kind of want to, if you want to get them to move into a new area for their own good, of course, because the original nest site is gone, what you have to do is fool them into thinking there's already a busy colony there. And of course, you should only do that when you know that you've provided perfect homes for them. And these boxes that are on the side of the building are absolutely ideal. And I think certainly the old town here in Baku, it wouldn't be the same without the sound of these swifts. It's the sound of the town, isn't it?
Absolutely. Exactly. I mean, I think it is a part of the culture already. You wouldn't imagine old city without the swift.
Yes.
Oh, a little baby room to improve there. That was from Mooney Goes Wild on Tuesday. And ancient crumbling walls is also something of an issue for the Honourable Harry Herbert, who spoke to Ryan Tuberty during the week. And as we learned, it's tricky keeping the roof over your head when your homestead is Highclere Castle, which you and I might know as Downton Abbey. However, for Harry's father, he firmly believed that the answer to all of their problems would be solved by tea and some hanging baskets.
My father, I mean, he was wonderful, but he thought he could keep the roof on by selling potted plants and cups of coffee and tea. Right. And it was it was historical. Every meeting we had would start with, you know, we've had a fantastic week. We've sold 25 potted plants and a record 100 cups of tea. Well done, everybody.
Yeah. The roof is caving in, but the tea is selling well. There was only so much pots of tea would have done to go towards to defraying the costs.
When we had the great, I'll never forget the meeting, when we'd finished the cricket, the South African cricket, and we'd had an Elton John concert. It had been the most amazing month where the place was sort of humming. This was long before Downton Abbey.
Sure.
And my father, you know, started the sort of meeting at the end of that month, you know, well, beginning of the next month with, right, well, it's obviously been a very successful month. Well done, everybody. Particularly with the hanging baskets, which have had a fantastic time. we thought, I can't believe it. We're talking hundreds of thousands of pounds of these other events, and we're still talking about hanging baskets.
He was determined.
Harry to the Manorborn Herbert with Ryan Tuberty on Monday. We take on Scotland tomorrow morning in the Rugby World Cup, and we are facing something that few people would really relish.
Seemingly slippery balls are a big issue because it's hot and it's humid and it's going to be wet. So the teams have been training with slippery balls. Scotland, for example, have put shampoo on their balls, their rugby balls, to mimic the challenging handling conditions. Warren Gatland, the Welsh coach, has insisted that they use baby oil on their rugby balls. England, yeah, Jamie George is their hooker. He's the man who throws the ball into the line-out. He's saying he's lucky because at least he can towel off the rugby ball before he throws it in. But it doesn't say what Ireland are doing. If they don't practice with slippery balls, are they leaving themselves less prepared than the other teams, I wonder?
Ooh, Ray actually sounds quite worried there. Playback, on the other hand, never too highbrow to shy away from the cheap titter. Paddy O'Gorman was up in Belfast at the Laganside Courts and he met a musician, a man who had been part of marching unionist bands. But a trip to Glastonbury changed everything.
I forgot my licence. I have to bring my licence up and pay a fine for speeding.
You're a driver, or you drive a lot anyway?
I do drive quite a lot for work on the concerts and stuff, you know.
You work on concerts. Are you a musician?
I play the flute and the drum. And I did follow the flags years ago on the unionist side, was in the flute bands and all that. In my early 20s and nearly 50 now, you know.
The marching bands, yeah?
Yeah, we were out about three times a week then, and I saw that dwindle over a few years, you know. I think Drumcree probably put a lot of people off. Disillusioned. It wasn't my thing at all. I saw right through it, you know. I think I went to Glastonbury in 92 and I've been trying to save the planet since then as well. I had dreadlocks down to about my ribcage, face full of pierced steel, and makeup sometimes.
So how do you think Catholics and Protestants are getting on now?
It's good while there's no old, bitter, grey-haired men telling the kids they should go and romanticise whatever colour of a piece of cloth, fight for it, do jail for it and everything else. While that's happening even slightly, things will keep bubbling, I fear, you know.
But, like, it should be okay to walk in a marching band, shouldn't it?
No, marching is... You only march up a road for one reason, is to fight at the other end of it, and that's how I see marching, you know. Dancing in the street, carnivals in the street, yeah, by all means. Okay. Pride festival, yeah, by all means. But marching behind banners and carrying swords, maybe, and all that stuff, it symbolises what's wrong with the world, really, you know, to me.
Peace, love and a little bit of dancing. You can't beat that. That was a voice brought to us there by Paddy O'Gorman. Yesterday, students and now adults took to the streets to protest inaction around our climate emergency. Brian O'Connell spoke to students in Ennis for the Sean O'Rourke Show.
This is what democracy sounds like.
Show me what democracy looks like.
This is what democracy looks like.
Got some basic ones. Says, save our planet, save our future, which I think... It's pretty self-explanatory.
This one says, you say you love your children above all else, and yet you're stealing their future in front of their very eyes. It was a quote by Greta Thunberg, which is very wise and very true.
In this one it says, you'll die of old age, but I'll die from climate change.
Is this the Lorax?
Yeah.
I've been reading this to my four-year-old. So it says, I am the Lorax, I speak for the trees, litter again, and I'll break... Oh, jeez, I can't say that in radio. It has an asterisk on it, just in case your teachers are listening. Sea levels are rising, and so are we. So there is a sense that this is a growing movement, isn't there? That it wasn't just one day and that this will continue.
I think a lot of the politicians that we have today acknowledge that they're not going to be alive for the time that climate change hits. That will inevitably bring the sixth mass extinction. So I believe that through our protesting that we brought, I suppose, what they call the green wave, and that I hope that we see efficient climate action in our lifetime and we won't go down without a fight. I think the girls will agree with me there.
And on the same programme, Sean spoke to John Gibbons from Ontashka's Climate Change Committee.
Do you believe we're terrifying young people with this negative messaging and perhaps burdening them with saving the planet for future generations?
Well, a couple of things, Sean. First of all, scientists are not robots. Most scientists are parents as well as professionals. And many scientists, both privately and increasingly publicly, are coming forward to say that they're terrified for the future, for themselves, but particularly for the next generation and their children. Maybe 30 years ago, Sean, we might have been scaremongering about this. There was concern, there was supposed to be plans and action. We did nothing. We've let 30 years in which we could have dealt with this in a controlled, contained way, gradually reducing our emissions year by year. Instead, we threw that away, Sean, for 30 years. We did nothing. From 1990 to 2018, global emissions have doubled. So, keep cups, brilliant. Plastic straws, brilliant. None of these are going to alter the trajectory of climate change. This will only be done at a political, intergovernmental level, top down. That means politicians, including Leo Varadkar, Richard Bruton, getting real, stopping messing around with this and facing up to the fact that the next generation is in mortal peril as a result of climate breakdown. Let's not even call it climate change, Sean. Let's call it climate breakdown.
Ooh, setting it out in the starkest of terms. That was John Gibbons, as heard on the Sean O'Rourke Show yesterday. Joe's back.
Call Joe. I can feel you. The nicest thing I felt.
your sexy way, which is and that transistor starts to melt. Call Joe, keep it steady. Joe lets me do the talking. His breath is heavy and I have trouble walking. He is the reason that I breathe. He is the reason I believe.
Yes, caller, go ahead.
He's on the radio.
Sure.
My Joe.
Happened.
There is nothing that can stop us.
He did.
Nothing can ever come between us.
Mother of God.
He sympathized with me.
So what happened?
My Joe.
Yes.
Like a twisted jetame for our times. Joe and June Rogers at the Ploughing on Thursday. That's kind of bizarrely catchy. Kind of is. Be stuck in your ear all day now. Called you. Called you. At various points this week, it seemed as if almost all of RTE had decamped down to the Ploughing Championships at Fenna, County Carlow. And there was something for everyone when Marty Morrissey and Love Island's Greg O'Shea joined Ryan Tuberty in the tent.
It's funny because we're in like a goldfish bowl here, right? And you hear those screams?
Absolutely.
Marty, yeah, I'm afraid I don't think they're for you or me.
No. I give a little wave. Just see. Yeah, I'm going to wave now. Okay, well, that's the end of that.
Now, Greg, you wave.
Yeah. Okay. It's over.
We win.
It's over, Ryan.
Yeah, but it's funny it's because great. We're in this goldfish bowl, and for the first while we were here, all the faces looking in were people of a certain vintage. And then Greg sat down, and suddenly all the kids came. Everything changed. Everything changed.
Ooh, Love Island, bringing that crucial youth demographic. BP Fallon talked to Ray Darcy during the week and mortality was playing on his mind.
As Booker T says...
Time is tight.
Time is tight.
Yes.
Is time tight for you? Or?
It's getting tighter.
Is it? Yeah.
It's getting tighter. It's a natural... You know, when you're 109, you do wonder whether you've lived maybe half your life or something, or less, or more. And you can't help but focus in on it.
And he talked about his sister Patricia, who had recently died.
I lost my best friend. But I'm very, very lucky to have had such an incredible friend all my life. And I know she's listening now, so thank you.
The wireless in the sky. What age was Patricia?
Younger than yesterday.
Right. How do you cope with that? How are you coping?
How do you cope with it? That's the question. I don't think, you know, they say time heals all wounds. I don't believe it does. I think you find an accommodation whereby you can live with this and learn to embrace it and learn to realize how blessed one is to have spent that time with someone who was a very special person.
Yeah, I think if you are sold that line that you'll get over it and you don't, then you feel there's something odd, there's something wrong with me. Whereas, as you say, you learn to live with it.
I don't want to get over it. You know, it's not like I'm some sort of masochist or anything. I don't want to lessen the weight of what's happened. Mm. I want to give it that respect. What do I think about heaven, or do you just go in a hole in the ground?
Well,
I'm playing my bets. I'll light a candle and say a Catholic prayer. If I knew a Muslim one, I'd say it as well, or a Jewish one.
BP Fallon with Ray Darcy. On Sure 'Twas Better, Will Hanifan brought us a timely and somewhat disheartening clip from the archives.
It's shocking in 2019 that a public figure, ex-rugby player Gareth Thomas, has to publicly reveal a HIV diagnosis because of threatened press exposure. The same pressures were faced by Irish DJ Vincent Hanley, host of beloved 80s show MTUSA, back in 1986. Here he is being interviewed by Gay Byrne.
You say that they're giving your parents a very
hard time. This is the reason. I mean, like I said to you earlier on, I've been in this
business since I was 17, dealing with the press at many levels over the years. Mm. And for myself, I'm as hard as nails. You they can nothing. Say I yes. care not one whit for myself, as long as they spell the name correctly. However, in the last 7 to 10 days, I hope I don't get emotional about this, my parents are elderly retired people of their generation. Now, they have been subject in the last 7 to 10 days to the most awful harassment from various newspaper reporters who have been telephoning my parents, scaring them out of their wits. What do my parents know about...
Saying what? Saying what?
Really? Asking all kinds of outrageous questions.
Like what?
Intimating to my father that there's something seriously wrong with his son and so on and so forth. I mean, it's the very invasion of privacy that I really detest.
They will say you're a public figure, therefore you must suffer. This
well, then try and get hold of me, but leave my parents out of it. Now, right. since the last few days, people have been showing up on the doorstep.
So what are they innuendoing then? Is it TB, cancer, AIDS, whatever?
Yes, AIDS. He said this guy who telephoned my father on Monday said to my father at the end of the conversation, after manipulating certain facts out of him that I had been under the care of the physician, the last thing he said to my father on the telephone on Monday was, Mr. Hanley, can you confirm or deny that your son has AIDS? Now, what kind of gum bean will say that to an elderly retired man?
Oh, the past isn't that far away, really, is it? That was Vincent Hanley with Gay Byrne, as heard on Sure Twas Better. Now, I hope you didn't think you were getting away without your weekly dose of Brexit, did you? Not a hope, my friend. However, in a small act of mercy, we'll confine it to just one rather spectacular press conference. It features Xavier Bettel, Prime Minister of Luxembourg, and he'd met with Prime Minister Boris Johnson. And Mr. Bettel was being devilishly indiscreet. Take it away, Drive Time.
Our people need to know what is going to happen to them in 6 weeks' time. They need clarity, they need certainty, and they need stability. You can't hold their future hostage for party political gains. So now it's on Mr. Johnson. He holds the future of all UK citizens and every EU citizens living in the UK in his hands. It's his responsibility. Your people, our people, count on you. But the clock is ticking. Use your time wisely.
Bettel, mad as hell and not going to take it anymore.
I repeat, this Brexit, it's not my choice. It's been a decision from a party. It was a decision from David Cameron to do it. They decide. I deeply regret it. But don't put the blame on us because now they don't know how to get out of this situation. They put themselves in.
Ooh, that's like the mammy equivalent of don't come running to me when you fall and break your two legs. Luxembourg President Xavier Bettel. Let's dance.
She makes me wonder if you know what you're looking for. Ooh, baby, I wanna keep my reputation. I'm a sensation. You try me once, you'll beg for more.
Spinning glitter balls in the kitchen. What a tune. Well, that is it from Playback for this week and for next week. We've been bumped for the rugby, Come On Ireland, and then Ronan Kelly is in the hot seat and I'll be back in December. A sincere thank you to everyone who got in touch with suggestions for the programme and a particular shout out to one listener who I'll call Ms. H. Thank you for listening. Talk to you in a bit.